I'm Jack Edwards.
Jack Edwards, the voice of the Boston Bruins.
It's like a heartbeat with this team. Boom, boom.
Jack Edwards joins Marloni and Fourier live on Sports Radio WEEI.
And who has more fun than us?
Get up!
All right, our weekly conversation with Jack Edwards is brought to you by D&C Mechanical, the HVAC experts in Tewksbury. Hiring installers right now. Check it out at dcmechanicalhvac.com. Joining us on the Harbor One Hotline is Jack Edwards. I'm Nesson. Jack, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing as well as I can be, Lou.
Yeah,
of course.
I'm telling you, Jack.
I thought I knew we were going to get like happy, inspired, motivated Jack today. Like, you got a lot to be happy about.
Oh, yeah. They've won 6 out of 7. I just went online to peruse the game notes for tonight, and they're not up. And that means that Philadelphia is having roster issues. The Flyers had their previous game called off because of COVID issues, and it might well be the Lehigh Valley Phantoms against the Boston Bruins in Tuukka Rask's return on ESPN tonight.
So I want to get to Tuukka, but I just want to ask you real quick, because really this 6-1 start, Bruins with 33 goals. I mean, it's been an offensive onslaught. I know early coming out of the break, it was like the secondary scoring, but lately Pasta, Marchand's absolutely on fire. Is it as simple as juggling, you know, moving Pasta down, Craig Smith up, these top two lines, in your opinion, and is that here to stay?
I failed high school chemistry just about. I think I got a C minus out of the courtesy of the teacher. But Bruce Cassidy and his coaching staff decided that it was time to juggle the lines around New Year's Day, and the results are beyond spectacular. I think they're going to stick with this set up, unless they have a series of injuries, because everybody they plug in is excelling right now. Tomáš Nosek got into the game last night after a spell on the COVID list, and he made a sensational pass, and he played a strong 60 minutes. As you said, Marchand and Pastrnak are excelling on different lines. Pastrnak has 5 goals in his last 3 games. Marchand has 9 in his last 4. Taylor Hall has come alive. Eric Hall is playing 300% better than he did previous to New Year's. And Charlie Coyle is a really, really effective third line center. So there's nothing to complain about. I was skeptical that this was going to work, but Bruce Cassidy knows his roster better than anybody.
Well, I know you're talking about positives. I just saw this in the Bruins just 2 minutes ago. Matt Grzelcyk and one team staff member are now in COVID-19 protocol. So looks like Grizz is going to be out of this game. We don't know about the staff member.
Oh boy, that's news to me also. So that's too bad, because Grzelcyk had a sensational game against Washington, a career night in all likelihood, with 1 goal and 4 assists, becoming the first Bruins defenseman in his lifetime to have a 5-point night. He's playing so solidly. So. You know, it's out there. Omicron is doing whatever it can to inject chaos, but it's going to be interesting who the Bruins put in there.
Do you think this game could be postponed? Is that a possibility?
It will be postponed if Philadelphia can't field a team. I'm pretty sure that Boston will bring up somebody like Jack O'Shaughn as an emergency, because I don't think Clifton is cleared yet. Forbert definitely is not, and John Moore is not available tonight because he took a shot up high against the glass, and he has an upper body injury. So They're down to five defensemen as it is. Tyler Lewington was set to make his Bruins debut tonight, and I still think he's going to skate the third pair with Arho Vaakanainen.
Okay.
So maybe Jack Eichon comes up from Providence, but that that means heavy minutes for Charlie McAvoy, Brandon Carlo, and Mike Riley.
Yeah, I thought you said Shaka Khan. Shaka Khan was, well, who's he play for? So, Jack, obviously, listen, I guess, you know, listen, there's the COVID issue. There's the offensive surge and all the wins over since the COVID break, right? But I guess, obviously, the biggest story is Tuukka Rask. That's it.
Yeah.
So, first game back in a long period of time, if they even have the game. I guess just your thoughts of how he'll be. And, you know, what it'll be like for him, you know, with his return.
I did some research on what is a torn labrum, and it's really, it hurts to read it. The labrum is the cartilage that's between the knob of your femur and the hip and the pelvis. And, you know, if you think about how often a goalie uses that joint and the stress that's on it, it's no wonder it took him so long to get back to 100%. But listening to Tuukka yesterday and the in the 8:30 in the morning press conference via Zoom, he's chipper. He's confident. I expect some rust in his game because he hasn't played in about a year, but you got to trust the word of the man who's number two in Bruins history with 52 career shutouts behind only Tiny Thompson, who played in the dead puck era. And he's the career leader in all kinds of stuff: games played, minutes, wins, shots against, saves, save percentage. And, you know, he's a sensational goalie when he's right, and he says he's right. So why not be pumped?
So talking to Jack Edwards, and Jack, there's no question it's a nice boost for this team. We know what Tuukka Rask is as a goaltender. Is there a chance that coming out of that COVID break, this team just knowing that Tuukka Rask was coming back helped a little bit? Was there a little bit of boost just knowing that this guy was coming back for them?
I think it was more of a mental reset for all the players, especially the star skaters like Taylor Hall, who was in a funk and couldn't get going, and Eric Halla was lost, and Craig Smith was struggling to put up points on a consistent basis. And this this change of lines gives them defined roles. And Bruce Cassidy and his staff have done a marvelous job of letting the players express themselves by doing what they do best and combining them in such a way that it brings out the best attributes of every individual player. For Bergeron and Marchand, who have been around for Tuukka's prime, I'm sure they knew before we did, but that Tuukka was coming back, and I'm sure it was a boost to them. But I think the juggling of the lines is more of a factor.
So, Jack, let me ask you. So Swayman goes down to Providence, and obviously, yeah, Tuukka coming back, right? Making it one, you know, giving it another run, you know, with this core group. You know, Omark is here for a few years. And we start thinking about improving this team and maybe what it takes to maybe make a real run at this year. Is there a chance? Would you even look at possibly moving Swayman in a deal to improve this team in any way?
At the risk of sounding like Don Sweeney, if the Bruins can improve themselves substantially, almost nobody is out of the conversation. There is just a handful, and a small handful of players at that. Bergeron, Marchand, Hall, Pasternak, McAvoy, and, you know, Tuukka. And everybody else is potentially on the table, but it would have to be a deal that made sense financially, because Swayman is, you know, making an entry-level contract, and that fits nicely under the cap. And the kind of player that they would have to get back for instant impact would be like 5 or 6 or 8 times what he's making. So they would need to be doing some serious juggling under the cap.
All right, well, hopefully this one goes tonight. We get to see Tuukka Rask in net. Jack, we appreciate the time. We were looking forward to talking to you next week, and enjoy Tuukka's return tonight.
All right, thanks. All
right.
The best.
Thanks, all right, Jack. You too, buddy.
Christian, you're so, you can tell instantly what kind of day Jack is having. Jack, the first 5 words.
I think Jack is improving his circulation, given how the Bruins have been playing lately with some Viagra. You know, let me ask you, so Tuukka Rask comes back. Listen, this guy tried to have rehab games down in Providence, and yeah, that team, whatever, Lehigh Valley, down there in Pennsylvania.
The Iron Pigs, I think.
They had COVID outbreak, and he couldn't play any games. Be a kick in the balls if you come back here to play the Flyers tonight and they call it.
It's like a possibility.
I'm trying to play hockey, for God's sakes.
It's 4:12
like,
right now.
I'm trying to play and you won't let me, right? Yeah. I'm curious to see Tuukka in there tonight. It'd be fun.
Yeah, there is a possibility this game doesn't happen. Like, I mean, Jack would know. Like, their rosters aren't even out right now. I mean, you don't got much time.
No. And I know that last question, Swayman, and I know people probably look at Swayman as like the goalie of the future. And I would only say, like, if in order to get talent, you have to give up something that is pretty good. You know, and I don't know about you, but I don't think Tuukka Rask is coming back, you know, to play 4 months of hockey and retire. Maybe he is. I don't know. Maybe they know, you know, like that he's done. But what if he's coming back and wants to play a couple more years?
It's possible.
And Omark is under contract for the next whatever, man, 3-4 years, whatever it is. And it's like, okay, if I move Swayman, can I really get what I need? Whether it's the blue line, maybe a legit second line center, whatever. I don't know. To kind of give this team what it needs. It would hurt, but it usually does when you go out and acquire the talent you need.
Sure. No, and I don't think a Swayman is a guy they probably value highly, than one of those blue chip prospects, you know, that they really would love to sit and develop. But I think, you know, having this is a good thing. It's a good problem to have.
All right. Speaking of Jack Edwards, by the way, the shot of the game was brought to you by Moderna. Moderna recommends all whom are eligible to get COVID-19 booster shots. Learn how at ModernaTX.com. That's ModernaTX.com. Now, I don't know if you saw that last night on TNT. I thought it was a good broadcast. Brad Marchand, who went nuts last night with the hat trick and got that sexy little was
got
it
a cowboy
pink
hat.
Cowboy hat? I thought it was, or maroon, whatever. What's the color? I don't even know what the
color
is. I like
maroon. Let's go with maroon.
He was actually mic'd up for this game. And in pregame skate, they actually had a nice little conversation with him where he just couldn't help himself.
Marshy Biz here. I just found out you're going to be mic'd up the whole game, so we're going to put the kids to bed. And sticking on that topic, you seem to relish with the smack talk. Is it something you use as a motivator night in and night out?
You know what? It's more something that it just keeps you involved in the game. I know you play it. Obviously, you like to do it. It's fun, too, you know? Whenever you get a good chirp, it just makes you feel good. You know, nowadays with the mics and everything, you got to be careful. There's a lot less of it. And, you know, like, there's some things you say sometimes. You're like, I hope they didn't say it. All right, there you go, right there. You know, but, it's fun, though, right? That's part of it.
See, I kind of like that version of mic'd up.
Yeah, I'm amazed they actually do it.
But, you know, they had him mic'd up, and at one point they're like, oh, we had Brad Marchand mic'd up, and let's go to him. And they just, he's like, yay!
He was just wondering if the puck got tipped in by somebody.
Yeah,
that was it.
Who's the kid, Vaikkanainen? Is that his name?
Yes,
yeah, the first
it.
Goal.
Vaikkanainen.
First goal, NHL goal. And he's like, was it tipped? And like, it's just like, that doesn't excite me. Mic the guy up. Talk to him pregame. I don't know. Talk to him in between periods as he's getting loose on the ice as well. Like, have those conversations. Like, hey, rather than like sitting him in like the aisle or something like that, having a talk between periods, as he's getting out there, whatever, I don't know, just skating around, coming out of the locker room. Hey, what'd you think of the first period? You know, like that kind of stuff is kind of nice. I kind of like that.
And, you know, like there's some things you say sometimes. You're like, I hope they didn't say it. All right, there you go, right there.
It's beautiful. Paul Bissonnette, he was fantastic, by the way. He's kind of nuts. See him try to break a stick over his knee, almost killed himself.
Yeah, he's got the crazy suits. He's got the mustache. Right, they're having fun over there.
All right, we got Rodney Harrison's going to join us at 4:30. He won a place to Trent Brown yesterday talking about this first matchup between them and Buffalo. The one up in Buffalo in that hurricane had a little admission on how he felt Buffalo felt. You hear what he had to say about it. That's coming up next.
Hey, Trent, how are you?
Who's that?
Who is that?
That's Trent Brown.
Trent Brown. Okay.
So that's Mike Giardi saying, hey, Trent, how you doing?
Give me that one more time. What was his reaction? Do we have that?
Yeah, it was Mike Giardi with the question to Trent Brown, and here's how it sounded.
Hey, Trent, how are you?
There we go.
Oh, I like it.
Speaking he looks like a guy that would just, what's up, man?
Hey, Trent, how are you?
You know, he spoke yesterday. It was like a screenshot of him, you know, on Twitter. And I was looking at it. I'm like, this guy is 28 years old. He is 6'8". He weighs 400 pounds.
He fills the entire Zoom screen.
Right? He looks like he's a 17-year-old kid.
Yeah.
Like, he looks younger than Devers, who looks young.
Yeah.
He looks like Devers.
It's like there's a kid sitting on his shoulder, popping his head through his shirt hole.
His face. Like, he looks like he's, like, 17, 18 years old.
Okay, there was an old Peter Pan movie called Hook, starring Dustin Hoffman as Captain Hook.
Yeah.
Okay, Robin Williams, the great late Robin Williams, played Peter Pan. And there was a kid in there, and his name, the character name is Thudbutt. Okay, I did a side-by-side.
Thudbutt?
His name is Thudbutt, okay? I did a side-by-side picture. And the kid, it's like a small, young version of Trent Brown.
It's like, you ever scroll to the bottom of any article? It's like, see what happened to these famous child stars. Where are they now? That's the picture they would use.
Yeah, it is amazing how similar these two guys are. But not, but Trent Brown looks like Thudbutt as a kid. Like, looks like him now. Like, if you look at the character from the movie Hook, okay, do you see it? It's remarkably similar. I really couldn't get a good picture.
I know you had it on your Twitter handle. We just retweeted at Merloni Fourier, but yeah, it's like I can't get over how young
just looks
Trent Brown
baby,
looks.
And he's so ginormous.
Looks like 16, 17-year-old kid.
It's amazing.
So we all know, like, up that first game up in the discussion after that Patriots win up in Buffalo, you know, that it was emasculating, I think was the word. It was embarrassing for the Buffalo Bills. They embarrassed them. Remember, McDermott was going nuts. Micah Hyde, Poyer, those guys after the game, going after the, I don't know, just media for asking simple questions. Were you embarrassed? Trent Brown spoke about that and how he felt like the Bills were more focused on proving their physicality in that last game at Gillette.
I don't know. I don't think you reading too much into it. I think it is what it is. It was definitely a different, much different ball game. I think they was the last time we played. First time we played them was pretty much, I think, and rightfully so, they probably felt a bit embarrassed, but also felt like they probably beat themselves a little bit. And so they wanted to, I think the second game they wanted to come out and make a point that they can play the run or whatever, but they won, we lost. That's all that mattered.
It was hard for him to say that, wasn't he, though, for a while there?
It's like, the whole part was
the embarrassed part. Like, he didn't want to say that they were embarrassed. He's just trying to figure out if he should or not. And then finally he just said, yeah, he felt like they were embarrassed. And rightfully so.
149 yards on 27 carries, as opposed to the first time you played him with 222 yards on 46 attempts. So, I mean, listen, the Bills, they just decided, like, they weren't going to let you run. And all those plays that were working for you, the tosses, the toss cracks, they were ready for him. They knew what to expect. And again, good job by Sean McDermott. Good job by that defense. And listen, let's not act like the Buffalo Bills defense is just some chump defense that just had one good day. Like, they're the number one defense in the league for a reason. Like, they're really good. They're good against the run. They're good against the pass. You had one big run in that game that made the difference. Otherwise, you kind of chipped away at it. you kind of, you know, did the best you could. You kind of, you punted and, you know, and then you just kind of played field position. And then you played good defense on top of that. So I would say that, I mean, the first game, you just didn't have any choice but to run. The second game is probably more of an indication of what they're going to play like on Saturday.
I mean, there's no question that Buffalo came in here in that second game extremely motivated, given how that game went a few weeks back, right, up in Buffalo. Like, they were embarrassed. I mean, that's what everybody was talking about it for the entire week. They just lost a game in which the opposing quarterback threw the ball three times. You know, and you know, contrary to popular belief, I know we've talked about this before, it's really more about the Bills' offense than it was really about the Bills' defense. Like, the Patriots broke one run. You know, other than that, it was like, what, three and a half yards a carry. They didn't run right through. They had one great run. It's just that the Patriots were able to sort of continue to run the football. If they punt, they punt. And if they get one first down, they'll keep running it. If they got the punt after the, you know, second drive, so be it. Because the Bills couldn't do anything offensively. You know, if the Bills were able to do things offensively, the Patriots wouldn't have kept running it into a brick wall and punting after three downs.
Yeah, they Trent Brown probably looks at that and says, wow, we really kind of had our way. We had one of our best. Oh, God, that's him. That's him. Sounds like Jack a little bit at the end of our.
It flip now? Were the Patriots embarrassed at home? Does it flip, like, that motivation? Does a guy Trent Brown come out or whatever, this Patriots team come out, and they were embarrassed at home like the Bills were 2 weeks prior?
I think offensively, collectively, running, passing, everything. Yeah, I think they were. I think they really felt like they just. I mean, it wasn't Miami embarrassed when you talk about Mac Jones and how badly he played. But yeah, listen, I feel like they're looking for any reason to kind of get motivated and to have a chip on their shoulder. The fact is that I feel like it's they're not getting the support they need for that manufactured anger. I feel like Buffalo is getting more of it. Like, they're earning more of it. You know, people are mocking their fans. They're mocking the situation. You know, it's just, there's a whole bunch of it that's going into their favor. How important this game is for them.
See, I think that first game was so bizarre.
You almost, like, got to throw it out.
That's my point, because people keep talking about, like, playing a team a third time in a season. You know, I almost feel like they didn't. They played this strange, odd, weird game up in Buffalo, right, with 60-mile-an-hour winds. That it wasn't like you played like you did in Gillette, right? You played Gillette, normal weather, it's 47 degrees, beautiful day. You didn't play well, they played great. Like, if there was another game to base it off of, well, then the other game, the Patriots played real well and Buffalo didn't play great. But I feel like that first game that the Patriots won was just, the conditions were so bizarre. It's like, I don't know what you take out of that game other than on that given day, I think the Patriots were mentally tougher than the Buffalo Bills were. And I think they made some better decisions and played cleaner than the Buffalo Bills. But it's hard to sit there and say, oh, yeah, they took advantage of, you know, Mac Jones was great, the way he threw the ball, this offense moved the ball, or the defense did. It was such an odd game that I don't feel like these teams have played each other three times.
Yeah,
like they played, like, one real football game.
Well, I would even say that the second game is an outlier.
Well, they played.
I would say, I spoke to Steve Tasker yesterday, and I asked him, I said, true or false, is this the best game Josh Allen has played in his career? And he said no. And I think that he forgets about, he looks at the stats and says, statistically, you know, he's had better games. He's thrown for more touchdowns. He's had better yardage, a completion percentage. But the plays that, like, the plays where he improvised and he, you know, shovel passing it to the tight end for a touchdown, getting away, scrambling, those plays were huge in this game.
All right. Well, as you mentioned before, yesterday we weren't able to talk to one Rodney Harrison and get his thoughts. I haven't talked to him in a few weeks.
Yeah. We haven't talked to him since Christmas?
Before Christmas, I believe.
Wow.
I think it's been a while since we got his thoughts. You know what? A lot has changed. When you think about the last time we talked to Rodney Harrison, like, a lot has changed.
Uh-oh. He still likes Anita Baker, though.
Conversation with Rodney Harrison is brought to you by Zuti. You can build any app your company needs in 1 week. Visit Zuti.com for details. By Shaw's, perfecting the art of fresh. And by your New England Kubota tractor dealers. Joining us on the Harbor One Hotline is Rodney Harrison. Rodney, how you doing, man? It's been a few weeks since we talked.
Yeah, man, it's been a crazy couple of weeks, but I'm all good. How you doing, Christian?
We're doing good, man. You're all healthy. You got you're all boosted. You're all Happy New Year, Merry Christmas, and everything.
Yeah, man. You know, hey, it's one of those things where your job kind of requires you to get all those extra booster shots and stuff like that, and you see what's going on out here, so. Just trying to stay safe, my brother.
So, Rodney, we were just saying, I don't think we talked to you since, like, before Christmas, and I think a lot has kind of changed here with this football team. I'm just curious where your thoughts are, how, given how this season sort of ended looked a lot like how it started. So where are you right now with the New England Patriots?
I can't say that I'm overly confident right now. It's just, you know, like watching them play, and I watched a little bit because I've been all over the place, but just watching them play, it just, they have to get back to being aggressive, that aggressive mindset, you know, and I know they're trying to bring Mac Jones along, but you know, this is the playoffs. He's no longer a rookie, man. You got to let him go. You know, you got to run the ball. You got to play some good defense, and the defense has to do a better job of being more aggressive against Josh Allen, not letting him hold the ball all day, not rushing scared. Get after this dude, man. This is the playoffs, and make him make plays. But you kid, the longer he holds the football, the better he becomes. So when he runs the football, you got to pound him. You got to hit him every single time. Guys got to fly around, play with emotion. This is the playoffs. This is what you play for when you play in the National Football League. It's not just money, but this to have an opportunity to play in the biggest games.
Yeah, you know, Rodney, I am interested, you know, as far as, like, what the Patriots' approach will be. Like, will they kind of take your advice and be aggressive on defense and let Mac be aggressive? But I also feel like, man, like, the last thing, like, their biggest problem has been turnovers and mistakes. I feel like they're so risk-averse. I feel like they rather force be play it clean and safe and then wait for Josh Allen to make a mistake.
Yeah, what happened with that the last few weeks or whatever? You know, I just, you know, I'm a little different, man. I'm like, you know, this is a second season. You got veterans on your team. You know what you can do. And it seems like when the Patriots, when they're focused, when they're engaged, you know, when they're excited to play, they can play well. And, you know, Mac said, you know, last time I read something, he says he was embarrassed. Well, you don't need to be embarrassed. You just need to take care of the football. And if he takes care of the football, if the defense can create a couple turnovers, I know those are big ifs, you know, then they have a great chance of winning the football. But they have to control the line of scrimmage, man. It's going to be cold down there. And you can't protect. You can't hide Mac. You got to let him make some plays, play action pass, some screens and things like that, maybe a couple trick plays. But Josh McDaniels and Belichick, they got to come up with some good, solid game plans, no doubt.
We're talking to Rodney Harrison. Rodney, I was actually talking to Foyer about you guys in 2003 and how you started that year up in Buffalo. You know how that thing happened, but how you finished it. And the transformation was sort of complete. And I was comparing it to this year's team, to where how they started the year against Miami and how they finished it. And there was no transformation. So it's like, you know, I don't know. I almost feel like this is a very uncharacteristic Patriots team that just continues to make special teams mistakes. Like, I almost feel like that's who this group is this year. Do you agree?
Well, hopefully they can look at tape. Hopefully, because that's the beauty of even, you know, when you played, say you played, you didn't play your best football last week or the week before or whatever. Now you get an opportunity to go back to the drawing board, watch tape, and try to make the necessary adjustments. And that's what it's about. Because ultimately what you've done in the past, that's over. Now this is a new entire season. And, of course, there's going to be a lot more wrinkles and things like that. But at the end of the day, man, you got to go out there. And you get paid a lot of money to play football. So you got to prepare. You got to go out there. You got to be ready to play a game. It's the playoffs, man. It's no magic formula. You know, you got to beat the guy in front of you, and you got to do a good job or a better job of taking care of the football.
See, Rodney, do you remember the pick six in Miami's game, the last week's game with the Patriots, where Mac Jones threw that pick six to Xavier Howard? Do you remember that play?
I remember him picking it off and celebrating the end zone. I've been watching so much tape of other teams. I don't remember the play specifically, but I remember.
I guess my point is, I feel like, yeah, this is the point that I feel like Mac is, for like a veteran player like yourself, a veteran defender, any veteran guy that's been around, I think Mac has become predictable. Like, his mannerisms, his personalities, his philosophy on the game has become predictable. And therefore, I think older guys and good defensive coordinators like a Leslie Frazier, I feel like they're starting to take advantage of him. And I think it started with Indy. I don't know if you saw the same way, or if you have like a story about how you took advantage of a younger rookie because you saw, I guess, call it a tell, you know, based on how he was going to play a certain down and distance.
Or we can go back to when they played against Buffalo, and think about this, Christian. You running the ball three times, passing the ball three times. Maybe he took that personally, and maybe he lost a lot of confidence. Like, everyone's lauding the game plan, talking about how great of a game plan it was, but maybe that backfired and maybe that affected Mac. You know, because think about it, because he's thinking in his head, oh, we only passed the ball three times. They don't trust me. They don't believe in me. And since that game, it's not like he's lit the NFL world on fire.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just sitting thinking earlier, like, maybe that's something that really affected him, you know, just only passing the ball three times against Buffalo. But, hey, man, it's time to grow up. You went to Alabama. You played in the SEC. I know this is the NFL. You played 18 games. It's time to turn it on now, man. It's time.
So, Rod,
but you know what? And let me just say this. The Patriots are good enough. If they bring their A game, Belichick comes up with a really good defensive game plan, they can beat the Buffalo Bills. No question about it. I do believe that.
All right, it's going to be cold up there, Rodney. Christian was talking about that playoff game you guys had against Tennessee. I'm curious. Actually, I don't know if you heard Bart Scott talking about how his advice to Josh Allen is to take Viagra.
Don't do that, Josh. Don't do that silly stuff.
I mean, have you heard of that before? Is that something? Well, how would you handle the cold?
It's funny. Let me say this, guys. First of all, I never, ever, ever heard of that in my life, okay? And sorry to hear that, Bart, that you have to use that. But no. If Josh Allen, you're still young, man, just put some extra hand warmers in your gloves. Don't put that stuff in your body, man.
What was it like for you, though, in that game? We were talking about, Christian was talking about, like, catching the ball. He said, you know, he's worried about it, but once the game got going, he wasn't worried about it that much. But for you, hitting a guy, like a running back in the cold, big backs like Damian Harris, Stevenson,
man,
what is
I
that
loved
like?
I loved it. Shit, that's how you wear them down. That's when you hit those guys, like when we're hitting Marvin Harrison, those guys coming across the middle, you heard that. You heard just taking their souls when you're hitting them out there in that cold weather, man. And a lot of these guys are from Florida, from the West Coast, warm weather climates. They cannot handle the cold. You just go out there, you play that physical football on them. And look, if you play for the Patriots, there's no excuse because Belichick, he's going to practice outside. You're going to feel that cold. You're going to feel that snow. They should be ready to go, man.
Yeah, so when you look at this game as far as, I guess, trilogies go, okay? Like, this is the third game. Which team do you think has to change their game plan the most? Which team, sorry?
I would say the Patriots. And you think about, I would say the Patriots, and obviously I talked about them being more aggressive on both sides, having that more aggressive mindset. But if you look at Buffalo, Buffalo's going to do what they do. The one thing that they've added, they're kind of running the ball a little bit more. You know what I'm saying? And that's why I say if Josh Allen, if he's going to tuck that ball, man, you got to pound him. You got to wear his ass down. You got to hit him. You got to make him not want to run that football anymore. And if the Patriots don't have those guys, they'll be sitting at home next to their fireplaces watching next week's game, you know?
Yeah. So, Rodney, last one for me. You have an MVP vote this year, right, in the NFL?
I vote on all. Yeah, I think I do, yeah.
So I'm just curious, your thoughts on the kid out of Chicago, Hubbard Cush, his thoughts on Aaron Rodgers saying that even before the season started, he wasn't going to vote for him because he thinks he's the biggest jerk in the NFL.
Yeah, that was really unfortunate because that's the unfortunate thing because you got a bunch of guys with that type of mindset making these votes, you know, sitting there voting for Hall of Famers, guys that have been there and really just, you know, have those negative thoughts about people, including myself and other guys in the National Football League that deserve to get certain honors. So it's unfortunate, it's disappointing, and the guy shouldn't – I don't believe he should have a vote. I don't believe when you come out, you publicly criticize a player, and everybody knows Aaron Rodgers should be the MVP. Tom Brady's right there, and for me, in my opinion, Derek Carr is a close third. But for him to say what he said, I was very disappointed. But that's the biasness that exists when guys like that have votes, and I think it just revealed himself. That's all it did. It just showed who we truly are.
All right, Rodney, listen, man, we appreciate taking the time. Enjoy the weekend of football. Looking forward to talking to you again.
Hey, man, sounds good. I appreciate you guys.
Thanks,
have
Rodney.
A good one.
All right, Rodney Harrison. All right, Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. He gave out a couple of awards, Executive of the Year, Coach of the Year. You hear what those are, and whether you agree or not, we'll do it next on Maloney and Florio. I just had to go back to that last answer from Rodney Harrison real quick. So he said that Aaron Rodgers, he felt like was possibly the MVP with Tom Brady right there, and then he had Derek Carr.
Yeah, no, first of all, he wasn't sure if he even had an MVP point.
He didn't say Derek Carr third, right?
He did. He said Aaron Rodgers, Brady not far behind, and then Derek Carr, for my money, I guess.
Derek Carr.
I don't... I mean, Jonathan Taylor, no.
Derek Carr?
Not even no Jonathan Taylor. I guess he doesn't value that position. That's amazing.
So let's talk about season-ending awards. Pro Football Talk. Mike Florio talked about Mike Vrabel being Coach of the Year. And I think at this point, we have to agree, right? I mean, you know, I would say 4 or 5 weeks ago, we're talking about Bill. He's the number one seed. We're talking about your boy, Kingsbury.
Yep.
Out in Arizona. They fell off. They're no longer in it.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Coach of the Year right now, like, it's got to be Vrabel or LaFleur, right? But I don't know how you can go to LaFleur, who's basically been 13-3 and won, you know, had the number one seed or whatever it was, like 2 years in a row, right? 13-3 every single year. So I think that sort of takes him out. I think it's Vrabel on the landslide.
Yeah, and isn't it, if you're going to look at your criteria.
Well, the guy out in Cincinnati, maybe two.
Okay, Taylor.
Yeah,
Zach Taylor. So you're basically, who's been through the most and had to deal with the most, toughest set of circumstances? And I know when the Patriots were playing the Tennessee Titans, you know, I think the number was, 70-something players.
Was
it really? Yeah. I think it ended up being like 88 or 89 or something like that at the end of the year as far as all the different players that were coming and going and on their roster.
They were hurt, yeah.
And then they were without their best player and then two of their other best offensive player, and not to mention a bunch of other defensive players.
Linebackers.
And they're still the number one team in the AFC.
It's a landslide.
Easily. Now, Bill, I think, you know, based on where they were last year, definitely an improvement. But to your point, he probably gets more credit for, you know, quick fixing this entire team, getting them back into the playoffs after a one-year hiatus.
Tyler?
I have another name for you guys, and I don't think I would vote for him, but maybe some others would. How about the Raiders interim head coach, Rich Bisaccia?
Yes, but what was he there for, what, 7 games?
Yeah, he took over when they were 3-2, finished 10-7. So 7-5 record for Bisaccia. There is precedent for an interim head coach to do this. It was when Chuck Pagano stepped out and Bruce Arians stepped in to be the interim for the Colts. So Bisaccia should get some love here.
I would say Bisaccia falls in the category of good job.
Attaboy, good job. No, attaboy.
I'm just saying, like, it was impressive. Like, he did a good job getting that team to the postseason. But, I mean, there's a difference between, like, you know, getting votes or somebody giving him a vote and really being a contender, really being, you know, having a chance to win the award.
Now, I tell you what, though, now that you know what Brian Flores went through and all the crap that he was dealing with, why doesn't he get some consideration?
Well, because some people might say he caused it.
Maybe he was just trying to do his job, but other people were fighting him on it. And he was 1-7. They won 7 games in a row, ended up with a winning record.
So the other award that they gave out was, and I don't understand why people think he qualifies. Like, Bill Belichick is Executive of the Year.
What do you mean, why they think he does or doesn't qualify?
He is not the general manager.
Who is?
Ziegler. Brad Ziegler.
Officially?
Submariner. Can I play without an
open? Is he officially?
But I'm just serious. Like, can Bill Belichick actually win an Executive of the Year? Like, it's not his title. He's not head coach, GM.
No,
like,
I know. We just give it to him.
And listen.
Wait, hold on. When was the last? So I'm assuming Scott Pioli was the last actual GM to win GM of the Year for the Patriots. And I got to confirm this, that he actually won it.
Bill can win. And again, I go back to, I think what was more impressive for Bill Belichick this offseason was the draft. What was so special they did in the free agency?
Well, he was, okay, you could sit there and say he just threw a bunch of money. I know, but he hit.
Well, I mean, when you spend money.
No, not even. You know how crazy and how unpredictable it is. Money well spent doesn't necessarily mean.
I get it, but you had a couple of misses. I mean, you brought in.
Give me another team that didn't make the playoffs last year that did make the playoffs based on all the moves they made in the offseason. Now, you can't just exclude the draft, Lou. You got to use free agency and the draft. So who did a better job as far as not making the playoffs?
I don't know what the transactions are of other ball clubs. But since he drafted Jamar Chase, what are the moves that they make? They didn't make the playoffs. They won their division.
I wouldn't even know
this is what I'm saying. So like,
in
Boston, you know, we're sitting there. We know what the Patriots did in the offseason as far as transactions. You know, but in other organizations, I don't know if, you know, the Cincinnati Bengals brought in two offensive linemen and three DBs and a couple linebackers. Like, I'm sorry. I don't know that. But, you know, Bill Belichick had a great draft, or his best draft in years. But he had a ton of money to spend, and he spent it on players. And some of them, they performed like you thought they would.
What about Jason Light, the guy out
of
Tampa?
What's so impressive about that is my point. It was more impressive what Bill used to do back in the day when he didn't dive into day one free agency, when he waited 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 days. you know, when he did bring in a guy like Van Noy from another town, another city, another team, that and he wasn't doing anything. Like when he had undrafted free agents, like when he bottom of the barrel free agents and they actually perform at high levels, like that's more impressive than going out and just handing, you know, six first day free agents money.
Isn't yeah, it? I don't. I no, I do. I
he
mean,
just had money just to spend. All he did was spend.
I know,
it.
But you act like it's so easy to be right, though. Like it's hard. Now, there's managing the money that you have and being frugal with it, and like you know, making sure you get the right guys. I think it's just as hard to do what he did. It's most teams, like again, Kraft was. They used to laugh at teams that did this. Why? Because it never worked. They never got it
all right. The spending spree from Bill Belichick. How impressive was it? I mean, is that GM of the year? I think it's more about the draft. I mean, you just had a bunch of money. You just spent it on free agents. And a lot of them are exactly kind of what you thought they were in their careers. I don't know how impressive that is. 617-779-7937.